While it's loading, good afternoon. I'm the last presenter, and I will try to make this short enough so we have some time for questions, because I know you're all sitting there with questions in mind. So my name is Alice Shoemaker. I'm the MPH director from the University of Nebraska. It's a joint program between the Medical Center and University of Nebraska at Omaha, and I have no financial disclosures to report, unfortunately. No, not really. I'm going to talk about capstone projects. First of all, how many of you are MPH grads or are affiliated with an MPH program? Okay, so you know about capstone culminating experiences. So I'm speaking to the choir here, perhaps. But they've probably all been a little different, and I'm going to tell you about ours and what we found out. The goal of a capstone project or culminating experience is to provide the student with experience in the public health field and an opportunity to provide a product mutually beneficial to the student, the public health organization, and the MPH program. So that's the goal of our capstone project or capstone experience. The reason for this, and this ties into this whole idea of workforce, and it ties into health administration here because one of our concentrations is public health administration. But as you know, we are following a competency-based curriculum. I think everybody, all areas of education are starting to move in this direction, but certainly MPH programs are, and you can see up here some of those competencies that we are trying to instill in our students. And I'll just point out a couple that I really think are important in terms of administration. One is the program planning, knowledge and skills, very important. And financial planning and management skills, another one. We can't seem to give them enough of that. And also the whole idea of leadership systems and thinking skills. I mean, these are all important, but I point those out as being ones the students would like to hear, really do have a little bit more exposure to. So why do we do it? Not to repeat what's already been said, we're blending didactic learning with service. And students are experiencing these new and different areas of public health. Also, they're developing competencies. Last but not least, they're fulfilling CEEF, the Council for Public Health Education's requirement for this culminating experience, which I think is actually a very smart thing on their part. These are some of our students and some of the projects that they've been involved in. They're all happy. Some our graduates are happy. We love to see that, of course. This culminating experience, of course, is based on service learning. Those of you who are familiar with service learning, this will all be very familiar to you. But it basically is the same kind of as an internship. We all know what that is, but the difference is it includes this reflection piece so that students are really required to sit down and think about their experience with the community-based organization. What did it mean to them? What did they learn? What did they provide? What kind of positive things did they provide for that organization? They also talk about some things that they might do differently if they were in that organization as an administrator. Otherwise, the rest of this is pretty standard. In terms of the model, it's not very sophisticated. This is just a plain old Venn diagram. But I wanted to point out that this little piece, I guess I don't have a pointer, but you see the piece where they all intersect there. That's really where the learning takes place and the competency building really takes place there. Because you're having all three, the student, the committee faculty and preceptor and the community-based organization come together and put their heads together in terms of having a successful project for the student. So that's the part we really focus on. Are we really achieving what we want to achieve in that area? And the rest of it we also are concerned about, but a quick overview, we break it up into two semester courses, each 3 hours. It's artificially broken up, but that's to satisfy our university. One half of that is for service and one half of it is for research. or a project or program development or program evaluation, whatever area that student is following. It's like we set it up like a thesis or a dissertation in terms of committee. We find this to be very valuable, including a faculty or two faculty, actually, one in the area of concentration that the student is involved in, a second person who is outside of that concentration area to bring in that kind of that broader perspective, the student, of course, and the preceptor who is in the community-based organization. And we require the preceptor to have a master's degree. That's on paper. But we also finagle that a little bit because not every organization has people of that level. So we have someone who has master's degree training in the organization, and we often, or not often, but every so often, use a preceptor who is not, but we have this other person sort of take responsibility. The faculty and guide the academic integrity, certainly in the research, in the program development or evaluation side, and so on. Staff, we have a coordinator who provides process assistance. Without this, the thing wouldn't go. Those of you who have been involved in these projects know that students need this interjection of timelines, how are you doing, enthusiastic support, you know, how are things going out there, and so on. The faculty also get involved with that, but the staff do provide that impetus. So what are the benefits? Well, some of these are pretty obvious. This idea of integration of theory with practice. This developing interpersonal skills, I think that's very important for students who are going into the workforce. Some of our students are pre-service. They're coming out of their undergraduate degrees. They especially need this development process. They also gain exposure. We've had students who have gotten jobs through these experiences. And if they don't get jobs there, they do start to define their career objectives, which I believe is our other speakers mentioned. Well, what kind of benefit is this to the site, to the community-based site? These organizations really are interested in forming a formal relationship with the university, at least in our community. They see the university as sort of a separate ivory tower situation. But in essence, they are very much, the university is very much a part of the community, and the community is very much a part of the university. And we're very interested in forming that linkage and strengthening that linkage. It also links the site to the university-based research and data expertise and the resources available. The faculty who are involved in those areas, they get to know them. They can call them up and ask for some assistance at times. This really helps. It assists them in identifying future personnel that they might want to hire in the future. And probably most importantly, it provides resources, human resources, which they really, really need because many of them are underfinanced and under-resourced. And the students do bring expertise to the organization. Well, what do the faculty benefit, or how do the faculty benefit at the university? Faculty get a chance to really get their hands around a project, trying to figure out how is this going to work. It's very different from a straight research project where you don't have to take into consideration the resources available, the time commitment available of the preceptor, the goals of the organization, what the organization wants to accomplish. So in that regard, the faculty really do begin to understand how those community organizations operate. And they need to know that in order to bring that into the classroom, at least in my opinion. If they're always teaching from a textbook, it doesn't have the same impact as knowing what the field is really all about. This idea of cultivating relationships, I think, is extremely important, and we go back to these folks a lot, and they come to us a lot for various services and needs. I think it also helps us assess whether our curriculum is any good. Oh, excuse me, not any good. If it's meeting what we want it to meet. And if it is, the student can actually bridge theory to practice. If it isn't, they have a very difficult time doing that. It doesn't necessarily make sense to them what they've been learning in the classroom and how they can apply it in the organization. So it's kind of a thermometer on our curriculum. The projects, in terms of the projects, they all have to go through IRB, which we think is very important. Students absolutely have to know that IRB is there to assure the ethics of the project and make sure that the human subjects, if there are any, and they usually are, are being treated well, that they aren't doing anything that is outside of those limits. Most of the projects are exempt, but they still have to go through the approval process, and we think this is a good vetting of their project as well. They make formal presentations. We invite the community in, the participants in to hear those. Sometimes we have better representation than others, but they do enjoy that. Increases the program visibility as well. This is just a picture. This is a community garden. This was a public health administration student. And what she did, which I thought was interesting, a lot of our students do surveys, but her take was, this community garden is in a low-income area of Omaha, but she was concerned whether the neighborhood was aware of the garden, whether they cared about the garden, how they felt about the garden. So she did this survey, and she found out they really didn't know anything about it. So that created a need for a marketing program for this community garden, and since then it has definitely involved more of the neighborhood than it did before. We have 54 sites. I certainly won't go through these, but these are just some examples of the kinds of organizations that we work with. And by the way, there is a handout in the back of the room, or there were, if there are any left. So what are some successes? The students get to choose the site and the project topic. We ask them to come up with their desires, and we try and match that to an organization out there who has told us what they are looking for. It's pretty unscientific, frankly. A lot of it occurs because it looks good to a student. Student sort of investigates it, and then it starts to work. Or occasionally it doesn't work, and we go on to a different organization. The preceptors involved throughout the project gets very involved and engaged, and so I think that's a real success. It creates an opportunity for good project design because the proposal has to be approved by the committee, has to go through IRB, so the proposal is in very good shape before the student ever begins to work on it. And in fact, ever begins to count the service learning hours, which puts a lot of pressure on the student to get that proposal in place and get it refined. In the end, the students all have tangible, credible academic products that they can actually take to a publication with some work, of course, and we think that's important. It provides professional networking. We think it's value added for everyone, and we think it enhances the scholarly capacity of our program. All right, so what are the challenges? Probably one of the largest challenges is getting our heads in the same place, the faculty head, the student's head, and the community preceptor's head. How is this going to work? Oftentimes, the project is way bigger than the semester's time allotment, the two semester. Well, sometimes they go into 2.5 semesters or 3 semesters, depending on other things in their lives, but we like to see it done in 2 semesters. So we narrow down the project often. That is often what we do. We would rather have a really good, solid project than have the student try to do too much. And I think then water the project down to where it's not as good a quality. And oftentimes, everyone underestimates the amount of time necessary for this. And another challenge is engaging faculty, getting them to understand that they might have to get step out of the classroom and actually, you know, get their hands dirty a little bit. But once they do, they are engaged. Ensuring that students are prepared for this, it comes at the end of their program, and I feel like we could do a much better job in preparing our students for it. In fact, I heard a presentation yesterday, which was very helpful, which included a whole series of steps on planning for the capstone, which I think we're going to incorporate that into our program, because currently it's kind of depending on the committee, the faculty committee, to do this and with the students. So I think we can really learn a lot there. I think sometimes applying the academic knowledge to practice is a stretch for some students, so we'd like to strengthen that a bit. Coordinating multiple parties, the service learning coordinator does that. In fact, it must be really hard because I have it up there twice. And meeting the project needs of the community partner. A lot of times, or sometimes at least, these organizations are in such need of so many things that their expectations are high. And so meeting those needs and meeting a reasonable level of participation, I think, is something that we constantly strive to do, but isn't always, frankly, easy to accomplish. I've already said that. References, and here we are. And I think we're ready for questions. Thank you.
Thanks for joining the session. We're now going to open for questions for all of the panelists. So if you have any questions, please feel free to raise your hand. All right.
Should we have an evening program?
Yes.
Do you see any way that can work into field trips?
I think it would take an awful lot of work, but I think you could. I've taught in our health informatics program in the evening, and we did include field trips to the many of the same organizations. Not as many, but we did do it.
Was it field trips during the day or during the evening?
Day, nighttime, evening.
Evening?
Yes.
So if they have staff in an evening and night?
Yes. Or they went out of their way for this one occasion to have somebody there. Yes.
Any more questions? Yes.
Yes. I'd like to hear from each of you, since we're in the process of developing these kinds of things. What kind of resources do you have for this in terms of faculty and staff, and what do you see is needed to really implement an effective program?
Did everybody hear the question? The question was, what type of resources do you all have to make the program effective, and what do you really need in order to make it successful?
In combination of that, when you speak with your faculty, could you just share what the teaching load is for faculty at your institution?
Number one, our teaching load varies incredibly, so I can't tell you an exact number. That one size doesn't fit all, depends on your specialty and that type of thing. But in terms of making this happen, once committed, for many years I worked with a graduate assistant, a new one each and every year. The previous one passed on the file, the context, all of this, get a head start, get it done, get the thing all planned. Pending my retirement in a couple of years, we've already hired my replacement. And so this year, she and I are doing it together. We'll do it one more time together next year, but we'll shift most of it to her. So in place of a graduate assistant, she is doing all those things this year. And wishes she had a graduate assistant to get it done. But it takes, I would say, on average, at least 2 hours a week for the person to just deal with that phenomenon of a field trip.
Any of the other panelists want to answer that?
We have a staff person who is a coordinator of public health education, and part of her job is to coordinate the capstone. So she does the logistics. You know, she gets them, she does the initial interview with them to see what they want. She makes contacts with the community organizations, gets them to sign the official agreements. And she then interjects her questions every so often to see how they're doing. Faculty do that as well. Our teaching loads vary dramatically, especially between the medical center and the University of Rasmussen-Omaha, which is a metropolitan university. In the graduate, our teaching load in our school is a 2-2. So with two courses each semester. Now in the medical center, of course, they're doing a lot of research. They have NIH grants. So their teaching load is different. And in fact, I didn't put that up there, but that is a challenge in terms of blending those two mindsets in terms of teaching. It does require a lot of resources. It requires a lot of time to do it right. And I think that's very hard to enumerate. But I highly suggest that you have a staff person who does the coordination. Because faculty don't have the inclination or the skills, really, or time to do that.
So in Wisconsin, we have, I coordinate the statewide program, and we have a coordinator in Milwaukee. And I would say that on average, it's about 25% of an FTE for the course of the year, although it varies, you know, depending on what time of the year it is. But I will say that, you know, our program is evolving and growing stronger and stronger every year. And one of the challenges that I see unfolding is that our health departments are more and more interested in doing research. And as they're doing that, we do have more of a need to get faculty involved and get faculty preceptors on board. So I see that as this program grows stronger and moves more, at least in some health departments, towards research, that we'll need to somehow engage faculty and get their assistance with the project.
I'm not sure mine really covers the space right then, but with each organization that I've dealt with and seen, it's been dependent upon size and upon what kind of thing they're trying to implement as well. Like you're all talking about more educational experiences as far as the hospitals and that sort of thing. It's really different. You've got department heads that run different areas, financial and actually inpatient and outpatient, like admissions and all that sort of stuff, and discharges. So it gets to be a very different thing, and it involves many more staff members, I believe, than on this kind of program level and educational.
As a sidebar, I'm a graduate of the Tulane University program, and I would encourage you to stop by. Penny Jessup, who's in charge of our international program, does a similar thing, and so does HSM, and they'll feel free to give you some information as well. We have a whole department devoted to it. It's part of our curriculum. Anybody else? Any questions? Yes.
My question is, since we go to Wisconsin AHEC license, I am from North Carolina, and I work at the AHEC in North Carolina. And so we have our open rotations. Not specifically public health. Do you all, in addition to the CHIP program, have a traditional medical pharmacy, physician assistant, student rotations, or?
So are you asking about those kinds of students rotating into public health or other more traditional?
I'm asking, are there two separate programs? Do you have CHIP just for public health rotations, and do you have the more, the other clinical rotations?
Right, yeah, so AHEC supports those other kind of clinical, the development of those other kinds of clinical rotations throughout the state, community-based rotations, but that's different from this community health internship program, which specifically is focused on public health. But I will say that we definitely, because so many of students in pharmacy and those other areas have an interest in public health, that we definitely welcome students from those areas to participate in the CHIP program.
And so the funding for the CHIP program is also provided by the AHEC, or did you say you have a separate grant?
The funding for the community health internship program is provided through state funding.
Okay. Any more questions? Yes.
I have a question related to anybody on the panel. Do you see areas that you have been unable to get into that you would like to, such as I was thinking prison system? They have a lot to deal with, you know, health healthcare, public health, and they utilize a lot of money, but I don't really see too many people wanting to go in that, students wanting to go in that area. Or any other areas that you can think of that lack.
That's a good question. I can't recall a single student who's gone into corrections. And I certainly think that violence is a huge public health issue. Our main, well, we have several corrections institutions like everybody does, but the state institution is in Lincoln, which is 50 miles down the road. Shouldn't be a big barrier, but I think it's hard to work in corrections because of the restrictions. There are a lot of rules, and students, I think, feel vulnerable. So I don't see that so much.
Putting yourself in harm's way a little.
But that doesn't mean they couldn't work with organizations that work with reducing violence, that work with people who are coming out of prisons, who work with maybe some of those tertiary type of organizations. But directly in corrections, I don't know that I see that happening in my program.
One of the really nice things about the CHIP program, as I mentioned in my presentation, is that while the bulk of the students' time is devoted to their specific projects on site, about 20% of their time is spent doing job shadowing, and many of them have gone into corrections with the public health nurses, and so they get to, their project isn't focused there, they at least get exposure as to how public health works in that kind of setting.
Any more questions? All right, well, let's give a final round of applause for our